from KQED.
Welcome to this KQED Public Radio Public Affairs Special, a program presented by the Computer History Museum in Mountain View. On August 8, 2012, a program titled The Art and Technology Behind Google Doodles presented an evening with the Doodle Team in conversation with John Holler, President and CEO of the Computer History Museum, to get a behind-the-scenes look at their creative process. Here now is John Holler.
14 years ago, Google co-founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page created one of the world's most original out-of-office messages. They had a plan to attend the legendary Burning Man Festival out here in the California desert, but that presented a very practical problem, because going away to Burning Man meant they had to leave the office unattended. And their office was still new, and it was housing a somewhat fragile search engine called Google. Technically, it was Google with an exclamation point. At that point in its young history, you see, Google was just a two-man shop. If the servers crashed while Sergey and Larry were away at Burning Man, Google would be out of commission until the boys came back and got everything up and running again. So they decorated the multicolor Google logo with a version of the Burning Man stick figure icon, which was a bit of an inside joke, but it worked, and the Google Doodle was born. The doodle grew to be an occasional thing that frequently decorated the Google homepage on historic dates and international holidays. Today, the doodle is a daily feature, some days historical, some days whimsical, most days topical, and every day entertaining. It breaks all the conventional rules of the sacrosanct nature of a globally recognizable logo, and that suits the Google counterculture just fine. It takes a team to perpetuate the doodle, which is why we're here tonight. This is certainly the youngest group of revolutionaries we've had as part of our revolutionary series. And they're here to help us explore the revolutionary idea of why the doodle is a way of keeping tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world engaged with and coming back to daily what is one of the most Spartan homepages on the internet and, of course, one of the most heavily used in the world. So please join me in welcoming the Google Doodle team, led by team lead Ryan Germick, engineering lead Chris Hom, user experience lead Marcin Vickery, and doodler Jennifer Hom. Come on up, guys. Hello. Welcome. Let me start just by simply getting you to introduce yourselves and talking a little bit about what your role is in creating Google Doodle. So, Jen, why don't you start?
Okay, I'm Jennifer Hom. I'm from Long Island, New York. As you heard in the introduction, I don't have as an elaborate title as everyone else. I'm just a doodler. But I studied illustration, and now I'm here.
Great. Chris?
Great. So I'm Chris Hom. From San Jose, California. I studied electrical engineering and computer science at UC Berkeley, and I lead the engineering behind the doodles.
Marcin.
Hi, I'm Marcin Vickery. I'm originally from Szczecin, Poland. I can't really draw to save my life, but I have degrees in both computer science and human-computer interaction, and that's kind of how I'm helping with doodles.
I'm Ryan Germick, and I am originally from Indiana, the middle of the country. I lead the Google Doodle team, which is basically amounts to being the really probably the craziest one on the team, trying to push people to do new and fun things, but really just like letting an awesome team like do what they do best, which is be really creative and push the web forward. Went to school in New York, studied illustration and creative writing, and after a stint in India and Japan, moved out to California and have been here ever since.
Ryan, I want to start with you. So after the Burning Man logo appears, this catches on. But how does that happen exactly?
Like fire? This is before my time. I was just graduating college around that time. And one thing that's really cool is that the Burning Man doodle actually happened before the company was even incorporated. So I think it's remarkable that this sort of irreverence and like fun was really part of the company's DNA, and I, you know, hats off to Larry and Sergey for doing that. And I think what happened was this was the first step in Google humanizing their homepage and having a personality as a company and showing that, you know, behind this portal to the internet for so many people were other real people who were making it happen and have interests and passions and things that excite them. And we've really just been trying to carry that tradition on ever since.
It was an occasional thing for a while. It wasn't a permanent thing. Do you happen to know, Jen, how it moved from that thing that used to happen only now and then to something that happens every day?
Yeah. So it started with Larry and Sergey, as you mentioned in the introduction. And we had, I think, a couple of freelance doodles once in a while for major holidays, like 4th of July. And then it moved on to Dennis Huang, who was then an intern and an engineer by training. So they basically found out that this engineer slash intern can draw, and they just gave him the task of celebrating regular holidays whenever he felt like it. It was usually around the holidays, like the winter season or Valentine's Day. But the company wanted to elaborate a little bit more on what they felt was their style, like how nerdy they were, how artistic they were. And that's when the doodle team started to develop and started to grow. When I came on the team, it was only three people, and then I was the fourth. And since then, we've just been adding more artists with more opinions and like more geeky childhoods, I guess. You might be the weirdest one. So with all of our different interests and with the expansion of Google, we just had more opportunities and more people to celebrate on our homepage.
And how many people are on the team? Chris, why don't you talk a little bit about the team, how it came together, and who does what?
So engineering on Doodles actually started out as a 20% project, which is a project at Google. You get a fifth of your time to work on just about whatever that you want. And that has sort of grown to an entire army of 20%ers helping out with the interactive Doodles. And then just recently, we started up a team of full-time Google engineers as well. So that's now a team of three.
And Marcin, it's, you have to look after the user experience. And Google is very proud of that very clean homepage, very unadorned with anything, not very cluttered. And in fact, I think if we think back to the days of the early search engines, they were a mess when you landed on Lycos or Alta Vista. Google was just very different. So how do you balance that desire for that with what the Doodle is intended to try to achieve?
It's actually really hard because it's always this tension that we have because, yeah, people come to Google homepage to search, right? And we can't really prevent them from searching. We don't want to. We try not to slow the page down in any way. We try not to make it too distracting. But on the other hand, you know, we love the doodles, right? And people love them too, and we're proud of them, and we want people to get excited about some of the things we're excited about. So, you know, sometimes we kind of like, you know, draw people in. We have a little play icon, you know, just to let them know you can do something with it. And sometimes you're trying to go, you know, hide a little bit more. And with every interactive doodle that we have, and this is something that started just a few years ago, and we're still kind of figuring out what it means for us. We need to make sure that, you know, people who don't care about it, although it breaks our hearts, they can still go on and do their search, but people who may be interested in, they will know what to do, and they will know how to enjoy it regardless of, you know, how familiar they are with computers in general or the subject matter of the doodle.
So, Ryan, when you joined the team, it was well-established, Doodle was well-established at that point, but do you get any sort of, does anyone sit you down and say, now, Ryan, this is what we're trying to achieve with the doodle, this is why it's important to us, or is it you just have to sort of have the gestalt of Doodle to understand what it's all about?
I mean, I think that, you know, everyone, as Jen mentioned, everyone who's come onto the team or volunteered with the team has added something. And so it's a very kind of democratic, collaborative process. I think that what has sort of evolved is sort of like three stages. The first stage was like, you know, simple things like the Burning Man logo or early doodles were like literally clip art, you know, and we sort of like ramped up from there with drawings that looked like clip art to then actually having like, you know, more fully realized illustrations, which was kind of like our second period where we actually had professional illustrators join the team. And then we kind of figured, you know, why should this web page, this is maybe kind of like actually where Chris Marcin and I kind of came into the picture, where, you know, even though I was trained as an illustrator, I was like, well, this is a web page. Why does it just have to be an image? Why can't we have you know, well, why does it have to be an illustration? Why can't it be a photograph? Why can't it be a sculpture? And then from there, it's like, well, this is also a web page. Why can't it be a game? Why can't it be a video? Why can't it be, you know, some sort of interactive experience that takes advantage of all the exciting things that are happening in, like, modern web technology? And so, you know, we just sort of rode that thought out to try to evolve what we do to sort of best ourselves and just really keep that humanizing spirit to reach out to users and try to have something fun and surprising and delightful every now and then.
So fun and surprising is really, that's those are two of the big elements of what a doodle is supposed to be, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's really like, you know, surprise and delight are kind of like our mantra.
Yeah.
And we think it's, you know, that's sort of our cause. We just want to give people a smile on their face for 10 seconds every once in a while.
So, and you just did that. You heard the laughter, right? Because we're looking at Pac-Man now as a Google
yeah.
logo.
Pac-Man's great because Pac-Man's
so talk
actually
a little bit about that.
A lot of ways Pac-Man sort of is what sort of started sort of our current era of interactive doodles, and that's really just it wasn't my idea to do Pac-Man. Actually, I think a team in Japan. We work with over 100 people around the world at Google who suggest ideas, and somebody noted that it was going to be Pac-Man's 30th anniversary. And when I heard that, it just got the gears going in my head. And Martin over here, you know, he's a nerd, if in case you couldn't tell already. He's, like, checking his email, like, while we're speaking up here. I was like, hey, you know, this would be so much cooler if it's a game. And I know this guy can do anything. So I'm like, you know, I pinged him on chat, and I'm like, hey, we're doing a Pac-Man doodle. Like, can you make it a game? And he's like, give me a mock-up. And And
this is how I sound.
Yeah.
But I do work.
And chat, yeah. And I did, and then I'm a bad friend. I didn't realize it was his birthday, which is March 4th, so everyone should wish him happy birthday on March 4th, or you'll never hear the end of it. And then that day, he actually made a prototype, and that actually, you know, and once we showed it to Marissa Mayer, who was our executive sponsor at the time, she gave us the green light, and then we've been spending sleepless nights making these things ever since.
So let's talk a little bit. I mean, the Pac-Man doodle is probably really a great place to just pause for a moment and talk about how it comes together. So you talked about how it got initiated. You went to Martin and said, can this be done? So how do you pick up the story from there?
So my story is I actually grew up with my dad having the best job you can ever imagine because he was actually repairing video games and pinball machines, right? So I would follow him and not only get to play for free, which, you know, is great only so far because I'm actually not a good player. But you could get look at those machines and open it up. Steve Wozniak was telling exactly the same thing as we were starting, right? That's the most fun, kind of seeing how other people do things. And that's kind of how it all started. And probably why I'm at Google today is because I got to open those machines and kind of play with them a little bit. But off the record, I honestly didn't care much for Pac-Man when Ryan approached me. Right? I'm like a little bit too young to care for Pac-Man. I care about like Gauntlet and Atari games in late 80s, right? Those were the best, right? But the funny thing is that as I started looking at Pac-Man and kind of analyzing it and looking at the code, it's actually a masterpiece. It's so much nuance, so much detail into the game. I mean, this is 1980, right? They had literally bytes of memory. They had Z80. You know, most of you probably know what it means. It's a very limited technology that they had at their disposal. And for the first time ever in games history, the mainstream games history, they try to tell the story. They have these four goats with the names and personalities, and they chase this guy, and you know, there's all of these little cutscenes in the middle where Pac-Man, you know, chases them back and all of these things. You know, very primitive technology, but works, right? And they had all of these little details of, you know, user experience, how it works, what are the algorithms, if every ghost looks a little bit differently. And, you know, very early on, as I was working on it, and Ryan was helping me out, we realized we have to go all the way, right? We actually have to recreate Pac-Man, and we didn't want to do emulation because that's cheating, right? We want to use technologies that we love, which is JavaScript, HTML5, all of these things, and we did, and it kind of grew exponentially because it doesn't look like a complicated game. It really is. It took us a while, but eventually we made it happen, and some people actually thought we emulated it. Some people were tweeting that this is the Atari game or Namco, whatever, and we were like, yes, you know, it's pretty great, like, you know, for some people, this was a throwback to whatever they were doing 30 years ago when they played Pac-Man for the first time. And this is, like, those are the moments that we really aspire to I think, recreate in, you know, in people who visit our homepage.
As someone who has to worry about a lot of the art behind the doodles, would something like that be one of the tougher ones? What's one of the more challenging doodles that you've had to take on or the ideas that's come, that has come up and you've had to say, wow? And that's going to be a real tough one.
Oh, goodness. I think the toughest one that I had to deal with actually had very little to do with my art education. Ryan loves this story because he knows that it made me really uncomfortable when I had to work on it. Earth Day of this past year, I didn't draw almost at all. I had to plant the doodle out of flowers, and that required a lot of heavy lifting, literally tons of dirt. That thing. It's actually maybe as large as from me to Ryan, and it was the hardest doodle I had to work on because I had to move the garden, not by myself, but it was like 1,000 pounds of dirt. Had to move it from one balcony to another, go up there and water it twice a day with like gallons and gallons of water. We didn't have a water hose, so I had to go into the micro kitchen and fill up a gallon. Everyone else was trying to get their coffee. I was that annoying garden girl. And then I forgot to get rid of it once it started to die and the doodle was over. So it caused a lot of grief on campus. But yeah, that gives me anxiety. When I'm not in control of the artwork, because that's my specialty, and I have to do something weird, that's when I get nervous.
So we were watching the Google logo bloom and prosper and then die before your very eyes. Was that part of it?
Die. But I saw it die. We had a camera set up inside the office looking down from a second floor onto the balcony, and it took a picture every 5 minutes for about 2 to 3 weeks. So as soon as it started to look really ugly, I cut off the files. I'm like, this is where it's going to end, because then it's just going to look really depressing on our homepage. And we don't want to give across the wrong message on Earth Day.
That raises an interesting question, and it's one that I probably have been asked more getting ready for this panel than any other, Ryan, which is that I'll start with you, and then anybody else who's got a feeling about this, chime right in. Logos are sort of sanctified within most companies. They're the thing that you really don't mess with unless you've got a Madison Avenue agency spending tens of millions of dollars in a redesign. And yet, as the blooming, prospering, eventually dying garden shows, this is just in your face. We're going to show you the Google Doodle in all its permutations and not really worry about that. How does that happen?
Well, I don't think Google's different in that way, because I think we take our logo very seriously as well. But I think any good logo represents a company, and I think for us, you know, one of our main values is fun and irreverence, and you know, like that playfulness. And so, in my mind, there's no inconsistency there. Like, we actually enjoy playing with a logo and sort of having fun with it. And you'll see in the kind of things that we honor, like this, we're actually now showing the doodle for. I don't know how many are familiar with the work of Gideon Sunback. But he's credited with the sort of modern-day zipper, and you know, this was an example where it's a simple enough fun thing to do on our homepage, but you know, this is something that we use almost every day. Sort of our values of innovation and technology and fun led us to play with that. But you know, that said, we take fun very seriously, and fun is a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And I mean, Chris can attest to the zipper doodle in particular, like, you know, using modern web technologies and deployments at a scale that's never been done before is tough, and we keep that as sacred and as serious as any brand does. We just do it the fun way.
So, Chris, talk about that. I mean, we're seeing this web page get unzipped before our very eyes. You have to be the engineering mind behind this, or the engineering lead. What challenges does that represent?
Well, there are many. I think that one of the great things about the zipper was that it played with the physicality of the homepage. And it's something that everyone's familiar with. And you see that zipper up there, and you're like, oh, I have to unzip that, right? And you click on it, and like, it actually works, right? So I think that's kind of the surprising thing. Like, oh, no, nobody would waste their time to make this actually unzip. But no, we went there. But there's a lot of technologies going on behind the scene there where, if you see in the video, the search result page is actually visible behind it, behind the jacket. So as you click, we're actually doing the query in the background. And when the page finally flips apart, you're actually on the result page, which we've never done before. And it's actually pretty scary if you think that, you know, for the first time, we're actually covering up results. So I had to make a very clear and confident email to the SREs that keep the site running. It's like, never done this before. I'm going to make sure that we're not going to break search. And that's the email that goes out for every interactive doodle.
You know, there's like a Homeland Security color code. Like, we have a similar system with Chris, where we're like, okay, we have this idea. How terrified are you of pulling this off? And Chris will usually sit there, call me for a second, and say, oh, you want to use Canvas for that? Okay, you want to do that in CSS3? I'm pretty terrified. I'm about a five terrified right now. I'm like, okay, five's good. Five, yeah, we can live with five. Great. We've got 3 weeks to do this.
How much help do you get internally from other Google engineers when you've got a problem like that to solve?
It's an amazing environment. If you have a problem, there's someone at Google who is an expert and probably worked on that in their previous job. One of the great examples is the Buckyball Doodle, where we had sort of like a rotating. Oh, this is another one that I got some help on. This one was for the launch of Google Instant. And the problem I had here was that there's so many particles floating around. It was taking a lot of CPU to calculate this animation. And so I said, I need to represent the Google logo in as few colored disks as I can. I'm not sure exactly how to do that. I had some previous iterations that were okay, but not great. And so I decided, how am I going to get, I just need to get other Googlers to do my work for me, basically. So I packaged it up into a nice little interview question, kind of homework problem, that says, I'm going to give you an image in a bitmap. Return me the fewest possible number of colored disks that can represent that bitmap. And I sent it out to a couple of Googlers, and I got back like 30 perfect responses to this problem. And so I actually had to choose, you know, between, oh, that one looks fantastic, this one looks fantastic. But I finally arrived at this as the winning solution. I think it's only 67 particles in the entire simulation. So
you're not doing your own work?
I mean, you know,
why are you here?
When it makes sense, I will get help.
Now, as far as the engineering culture within Google goes, if I have an engineer working for me on a really high priority project and I walk over and I say, how's that going? And he says, or she says, well, I'm working on this doodle problem for Chris, and you know, I'll get on that in a couple of hours. How does that play within Google?
It's interesting. So it was only recently this year when I started doing this as my full-time position. I was previously working on search, and this was kind of my side project. And so I always felt a little guilty. I always felt that, you know, maybe I'm taking away too much time for this project. But internally, there's just so much support, and everyone realizes that this is just our way of making something fun and sharing it with the world, and also, you know, showing off what you can do in a browser that couldn't be done even a couple of years ago. So definitely very much support in me taking time to work on these.
How confining is it, Marcin and Ryan, to work within today's web browser and still make all these magical things happen? And can you talk about it in sort of layman's terms so we could all understand, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 9 or an 11 or...
It's pretty confining. So I can actually give you an example. So a couple of years ago, we had this dual celebration. There was 4th of July doodle that we wanted to do for, was
2010 for Rube Goldberg, who was born on the 4th of July in San Francisco, actually. And we wanted to celebrate him and 4th of July at the same time.
So this what we call sometimes a tandem doodle, and we have more examples like this. But so Ryan put together this, as he called it, overly patriotic Rube Goldberg contraption that's, you know, delightful, kind of cute. We've never done this before. And it
actually explodes into stars, but that was a separate element.
Yeah, but it seems incredibly simple, right? It seems like computers could do that. But they can't really. In 2010, it's very hard to do something like this in a way that would work in absolutely every browser possible in, you know, every platform, right? We could do Flash, but it doesn't work on some things. We could use YouTube, but it's really heavy. It's going to slow down the page. You know, we could load an animated GIF, but you know, animated GIFs don't look that great, and we want our doodle to look great. So we actually invented this technique for the first time, I think, in at least our history, to animate it just for this doodle. Where we actually kind of cut up this animation, try and create it into little bits and pieces. And instead of just changing the frames, we just draw new little patches of animation on top of the previous one. So actually, let me show it to you the way it would look right here. Actually, I can explode it so you can see it a little bit better. So It's really what's happening is that we don't animate. We just like patch every new little thing so it looks like it's a thing. And it allows us to do whatever we wanted to do and nobody knows any better. And sometimes that's the trickery that we have to use. And it's literally happening over and over again because we're really very excited about technology. You know, the web is getting better literally every single week, right? And we want people to be excited about technology as well because, you know, that's what Google is all about, really. So, we're trying to find, you know, all of these new technologies and find a good use for them in a doodle, right? And, of course, Google homepage is not a place for tech demonstrations, right? We have very specific things that we want to do with our doodles, and it's celebrating people, celebrating events, things like that. But if there's this perfect moment where we can use a technology that just arrived, that nobody knows about, and we can actually use it for good, and it makes sense within the doodle, I think that's where we do like some of the best interactive doodles we can, and I think that's very exciting.
I would like to note that working with these guys, and I think it's a really interesting arranging. It's like it's basically like a very equal partnership with the engineering and the creative folks, and like I feel like I get to use a magic button. You know, I get to make. I have an idea, and you know, I'll draw it, or like one of the other really talented doodlers will have an idea and draw it, and then we get to press the magic button and give it to these guys. Marcin did this on the shuttle ride home. In 45 minutes from Mountain View to San Francisco, I was like, hey, I want to animate this thing. Here's this animation. Do you think it's possible? He's like, oh, I'll check it out. And then later that night, he's like, does this work? And I'm like, this man and his dark magic. I was like, I'll take it, but I don't know what kind of thing he's doing. But it's just really incredible to have that sort of like, you know, relationship with engineers and technical people where it's just like this intersection of art and technology. That's just so fun and delightful to be part of. And I'm really happy that we can do this and sort of stay on the cusp of the technology and then release it to the users as a kind of a thank you for coming to the homepage.
Do you feel like you're letting the world in on a delicious little secret every day when you're releasing these things?
I think it's just great to have a team where we have fun and we kind of like, you know, creatively support each other and then we get to share it with everybody else. And I'm as thankful for people checking it out as I am, you know, for the chance I get to make it. And all in all, it's just a very lucky situation, I think.
Chris, what's the first country every day that gets to see the new Google Doodle?
So for a long time, there was a country called Tonga that was, I think, GMT plus 13. So they're way out in front of the dateline. And they would get it at 4 a.m. the day before. So even though it's 9 p.m. here when the doodle launches, Tonga's way out there getting to see the doodle before everyone else. But just recently, there's a new country called Tokelau. I don't know where it came from. It came up out of the water. But I guess maybe now they are recognized, but they're actually... all my money is in Tokelau accounts right now. But they're actually GMT plus 14, and so 3 a.m. the day before the doodle launches here, Tokelau gets a sneak peek.
So Tokelau gets to see it.
So this is a hint for everybody. Like, if you go to, for example, Australia, you get the sneak preview of the doodle that the U.S. is going to get at 9 p.m. So
tomorrow's every day.
Yeah.
Let's talk about anything that may have gone wrong. Shall we?
Can I talk
Nothing
about
Nothing ever goes wrong.
Well, what we have a kind of another, besides surprise and delight, another one of our informal mottos is like, if you didn't break something, you probably weren't trying hard enough. Yeah. So I think something kind of goes wrong all the time. But we try to learn from that. And I guess one example actually would be on the technological side, we had an idea to do, actually this is Jared, I don't know if he's here, but one of our engineers, one of our 20% engineers, he brought a passion project to us. He was like, I really want to do a doodle for Alexander Calder, the mobile artist. And he's like, I went to the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago and I saw this amazing exhibition. And, you know, I know you guys celebrate artists, and it would just be perfect to have, you know, one of those mobiles, like, in the shape of an abstracted Google logo. Like, that sounds awesome. Like, let's try it. But at the time, we were a little bit more hesitant with the type of technology we wanted to use. And we sort of held back. We're like, well, let's make sure we use technology that everybody can use. And we actually tried to do it to accommodate, like, IE6 and some old browsers. And we tried to put it out, and the technology just wasn't ready. And so we worked really hard, just like a normal doodle. We tried to get it right, And it just wasn't good enough for us. The animation was choppy. The files looked a little bit wonky. And we actually pulled it. We decided not to do it that year. But then Jared came back strong the next year. We looked at it again with modern technology. And if you want to pull it up, you can see what we ended up doing. And so this is all actually not drawn. It's actually he rendered all of this in the computer with vector graphics. You can see there's actually a little subtle shadow there. And one of the coolest things about this is even programmed it. The physics are real. You can push and pull the doodle. You know, like one step up, you know, you do that in a museum, you get tasered. On our homepage, it's fine. And one other thing that was cool is in this doodle, it was affected by the computer's accelerometer. So if you had a laptop with an accelerometer, you could tip the laptop, and that would determine the physics of the thing. And, so we're always trying to, you know, push what's available. Actually, Martin has another good story about something that's up right now, actually, that kind of pushes what's
available. So I don't know how many of you saw the hurdles doodle, this guy. It just happened. So great work from a number of engineers and illustrators on the team. This is actually me playing. So, I mean, you feel free to applaud anytime. But we were... So, you know, we can play with a keyboard and with a mouse and with a touch if you have a tablet, which kind of, you know, hello RSI. But we also had this new technology that just came out that you could actually plug in your game controller to your computer, right? And, you know, once you do it, you can play like you know, old school games, right? You play using gamepad, and that's for some people, it's actually a lot of fun. When this came out, this technology was exactly 6 days old. So we were petrified. Like Chris, you know, alert level 9 or whatever, right? So the thing is that we want to try, right? It seemed like a perfect fit because it's a game and we want people to get excited about the fact that now can use gamepad to play web games, right? It's never happened before. But Chris and engineers on the team have this amazing infrastructure so that if in a case anything goes wrong, we can fix it, right? We can very quickly fix it or change it or pull it down or do whatever so that, you know, again, people are not affected. People who actually come there to search, you know, that doesn't crush their browser, doesn't slow it down.
We should give credit to, I see Dan Reed in the audience. He's actually one of the many talented engineers that we work with, and he's pulled many late night miracles for us when we do break something, hopefully before anybody finds out.
And you know, if like something doesn't break once in a while, probably means like you weren't trying hard enough, you know. So I think, you know, we're scared, but, you know, we're also ready.
Do you get ideas from all over? Are people constantly pitching Google Doodle ideas inside and outside the company?
Yeah, I think that's one of the fun parts of the job is that people know what we do and they want to help out. So we get a lot of suggestions, obviously, from within the team, and then we get a lot of suggestions from other Googlers in different countries. And then my favorite part is getting suggestions from our users. We have an email address, proposals@google.com, and we get all kinds of suggestions. What are some of the better ones that we've gotten?
Well, the water on the...
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that was actually kind of a
nightmare. We did a doodle for water. I don't know if you guys remember that.
We did a doodle a while ago for the discovery of water vapor on the moon, and that came about because we got a bunch of emails, and I was reading the article online also in the news that we found water vapor on the moon. So it's an example of how short of a time frame we have to work with sometimes. Like Ryan was saying that the Olympics were planned 6 months out. For this one of my earlier doodles, I was reading the news and then I suggested it to my managers and they sent it up to our executives. And I was sitting down at lunch and I was taking my first bite out of my meal when I got a phone call and said, hey, we need this as a concept, a draft, and a final on our home pages in 4 hours. So I was like, all right, I'm going back to work. I don't think I ate much that day, but that was fun.
And we've seen a lot that are very US-centric, but you obviously have Google offices all over the world who are constantly proposing, and you do execute on a lot of international doodles, too. How does that process work?
Like I mentioned before, we have somewhere around 100 different folks around Google that chip in ideas, mm-hmm. and the vast majority of doodles we do are international, vast majority. And some of the ones you're seeing are run around the world. There's kind of three types of doodles. There's a local doodle, which is like one country or one region. We'll have a regional doodle, which is, you know, something maybe like Chinese New Year, which would be celebrated in know, Taiwan, Korea, mainland China, as well as Hong Kong, and so on. And then a global doodle, which we show everywhere. And so we basically just look at our, we solicit ideas every few months or so, and we try to look at a plan, and we say, like, you know, what ideas resonate with Google users, and what can we do, you know, how many can we do well? And so we try to, you know, find that balance of, like, how many illustrations or interactive doodles can we create to bring the maximum amount of joy to the world, and then we go from there.
I'm going to get to the audience questions now because I have this thick stack of cards. I want to be a Google Doodler. What college should I go to, and what degree should I get? And P.S., I'm only in sixth grade.
It depends on what you want to do. If you want to be an engineer, then Chris can speak to that. But from the art side, I don't know, any art college, be passionate about whatever you like. Let your inner nerd out. I know that I drew a lot of unicorns and fairy princesses growing up, and I didn't really stop through art school. And for some reason, I got a job out of it. So from the art side, just be like that guy and just do whatever makes you passionate. And yeah.
Okay. Great. Chris, what about the engineering side?
I think draw the code equivalent of a lot of unicorns. Go in your spare time, you know, code as much as you can. Just in JavaScript, play around, make cool effects. That's what I used to do just for fun, and now I'm getting paid for it. So.
That's great. All right, so here's one. Chris, stick around, because your middle school principal, secretary, and counselor are here tonight.
Oh, no.
And it asks very politely, can you thank them for coming? So let's just say thank you very much for being. Raise your hand. Where are you? Fantastic. Right here. Your fan. Rights issue. Did you have any issues with integrating the iconic music of the Pac-Man game into the Pac-Man doodle?
Whenever we do a doodle that has any kind of partner, we reach out to them. And actually, for the Moog doodle, we worked with both Bob Moog's family and the Moog Music company, just to make sure we were being as authentic as possible. So in that case, we would have gotten their permission.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a doodle archive? And if so, how do we get to it?
Google.com/doodles. Every doodle is there, and most of them were interactive. You can play.
Are there any topics or causes that are off limits for doodles? That is, political, partisan, controversial. Who approves them, and how?
I'll take this one too. We do. You know, with our mission being a surprise and delight, we're not trying to surprise, delight, and enrage. Slightly, that last couple words really changed things. But we try to keep things light and fun. So we're not really like trying to make a political statement or a point. There's plenty of wonderful things that everyone can agree are wonderful, or at least nerds can agree are wonderful, that we can celebrate. And the team is pretty democratic. I mean, we have like we work now directly under the search team, so we filter those ideas up. But we have a really strong set of internal principles and. That follow us, make sure that we keep on keeping on with the goodness of doodles.
There's a question here about the UFO doodle.
Which one?
Well, the question says, did your team anticipate the reaction of the internet gave the UFO doodle? So the one that got the big reaction.
Are you around for that one? H.G. Wells?
Oh, H.G. Wells. I was kind of around that.
I feel like there's another level of art to doodles. It's one is like, there's the visual art, there's the technology, and then there's sort of like the art of putting something in front of hundreds of millions of people. And maybe that may be the art that I'm actually most interested in some ways. And for this doodle, this was, Michael Lopez was the doodler on this, and he had this idea where, to test the assumptions of doodles. So before, we always show you what the doodle is. You can click through the doodle to get a search query, and it's kind of nice. It's sort of like, we like to almost think of the doodle as a visual representation of curiosity. You see this image, and it's like an image pops in your head, it pops on your homepage, and you want to click on that to learn more, and that's what Google search allows you to do. In this case, we wanted to play with that, and we wanted to not tell you what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, and we thought, again, emulating, like, the Rube Goldberg device or the Pac-Man game or the Charlie Chaplin movie, you know, H.G. Wells, you know, with his radio broadcast was also creating a type of public mystery with what's going on and some kind of playful confusion. And so, we thought this would be a good opportunity to try that. And so, you know, we never know what we're going to get when we put something out. But, you know, we have an idea and we try to, like, you know, gut check it with a team and do something fun that sort of speaks to, you know, what Google is about, and we put out there, and we're always happy when there's a positive reaction.
This is a commercial question. What has kept the homepage and Doodles free from advertising? And a related question here is, what is your relationship with the internal Google marketing teams? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think that, again, early on, this is something that's just like literally not even day one. It's like day negative 17. The first Doodle was like August 20-something, and the company was incorporated in September. You know, it was just the homepage was seen as a place to humanize the web and sort of acknowledge users and, you know, with a kind of shared passion. And it was like something about trust there. And I think that if we were to sell that space, make it a commercial space, that trust is lost. And there's so few places in this world, let alone on the internet, that aren't for sale. You know, and so I think it's a really, we recognize how special that is. And, you know, in terms of like marketing at Google, we sometimes have like homepage promotions under the search buttons for a product or announcement we think is really important or really cool. And it could range from disaster relief in Japan when the tsunami happened, that was one. Or it could be there's a new version of Chrome or something, whatever, you know, whatever's coming out. Google's constantly doing cool stuff. The search team just announced a couple of new cool features today. In those cases, you know, almost like advertising at Google is seen as a hopefully a helpful thing. You know, like if you have search ads and you see the ads on the left or the top of the screen, they're telling you about things that are related to what you searched about because we think you want to know about them. And we try to create like a win-win situation for both the advertiser and for the user. And so as far as the homepage and what's on there for marketing, it's a similar kind of thing. We think this is something the user's going to know about because it's something we're proud of that we did. And we think, it, you know, hopefully all the products we make benefit their lives in some way. So, you know, as far as what goes on the homepage, that, you know, that principle is sustained.
Marcin, this is a question about users and the user experience. Is there an ideal time that you would length of time that you would like a user to spend with a Doodle? And have Doodles ever been rejected because they take too long to watch?
Actually, that's really interesting. So we kind of all over the place on this. So we, as Ryan said, like with every Doodle that's interactive and probably every other Doodle as well, we want to try something new. Right? There's no point in like rehashing ourselves and doing the same thing over and over again, right? So, for example, last November in Europe, we had this Doodle that I was very lucky to have been working on because it was my favorite author, Stanisław Lem, who was a Polish author, and he worked most famously on a book called Solaris that was eventually turned into a movie. And we made this Doodle with Sofia, who's the illustrator, that literally was like a 5-minute game, right? That was based on some of the stories of Stanisław Lem. And we were petrified, right? We were like, is this going to be too long? Like, is this the place? It actually expanded, you know, just to resemble a book, you know, book illustration, because this is all based on the style of illustrations from his books. And it's all these games based on his stories. And I think people were happy, right? And we got a lot of really positive feedback. And a surprising amount of people actually, you know, stayed to the end, right? You have to solve the puzzles, and it takes 5 minutes. And it's a really cool ending. So if you want to go to the archive and check it out, it's actually pretty fun. But then on the other hand, we have hurdles, right? And, you know, it's 10 seconds because that's how it works. Okay. You know, there's no point in making a marathon doodle, although maybe one day, I don't know. We can try. But I think we try to stick to the subject matter, right? And try to be true to whatever we want to celebrate. And if it makes sense for it to be short, we're going to make it short. If it makes sense for it to be long, we're going to try to make it long. Although, I think 5 minutes, I don't know if we want to go above that.
It's pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we have some other ideas that, you know, I can't really talk about, but, you know, what if a doodle was around for like 24 hours and it kind of, you know, like stayed with you, so if you visit it later, it changes, you know, as the day progresses. There's a lot of really interesting things that we want to try with time and, you know, stick around and we'll see what happens.
Do you test these internally for those kinds of issues before you release them?
We do. We actually have a great support from some user researchers that, you know, sometimes we actually bring people from the outside to, you know, do proper user testing to see whether they struggle, whether they understand what the doodle is about, whether, for example, you know, you saw the basketball doodle, right? Whether it's clear what you have to do in order to play basketball, right? Sometimes we just, you know, if you're running out of time, we just grab some people on the corridor and, like, play with this for half a minute. And it's really, really useful. But, you know, as some of the doodles are actually pretty complex, right? And we want to make sure that everybody who visits the homepage can, you know, can have fun, that we don't forget about, you know, somebody who might not be used to computers or maybe is playing on some weird device or whatever.
My friend Laura Seidel from NPR, who's frequently here as a moderator, tweeted today about the basketball doodle. She said, "I'm really trying to get some work done today, but I can't tear myself away from the Google doodle."
So I have an anecdote. I have some friends who actually work on Obama's re-election campaign, and they were telling me yesterday, we had, like, we spent a lot of time playing the hurdles doodle, and we had, like, internal competition. So if Obama loses, it's your fault.
Here's an interesting question. Will we ever see a 3D doodle?
Nothing's off limits. So yeah, anything we can figure out, you know, we'll try to do.
Calder is actually built using a web technology called Canvas that lets us sort of draw arbitrary images. And that's taking points in three-dimensional space and then drawing it as a 2D image.
So. I think we're talking about, like, 3D.
Oh, like with glasses?
I think that may be what the question's about. Yeah.
You know, when you, like, try to reach for the credits every time
you
go into a theater.
I'm a sucker for 3D movies. If you don't really care what the movie is, it's 3D, so.
Smell-o-vision is really the next step.
I don't want to let you take the power over smell-o-vision.
If you go close, it smells just like a computer monitor.
So you talked about, Jen, you talked about, I think you said proposals at google.com. And here's a, sort of the flip side of that. Is there a way that users can tell Google and the Doodle team how much they enjoy a given doodle on a given day?
Oh, thanks.
Softball question.
Oh. Well, we do like to know what our users have to say about our doodles. So sometimes we'll go into just like social networking sites like G+ or Twitter or Facebook or just look up articles. And we usually hear what users say just by reading tweets. So, yeah, just make your voice heard in general. We'll find it. Yeah.
Let's talk about, this is a really great question. Let's talk about smartphones and mobility for a minute. How much has that affected the way that you think about the design of a doodle? And do you design them explicitly to work on Android and Apple and mobile platforms?
It's a challenge. I mean, we definitely want to get these doodles in front of as many folks as possible. And obviously, a lot of people use their phones and tablets to access Google and the web in general. It's kind of funny because back in the day, I think the development challenges were like, you know, oh, I have to design for IE6 and Firefox and, you know, Safari and Opera and Netscape or whatever. And now it's like, I think the challenge is more like, I've got to design for, you know, keyboard interactions and touch and a screen that's this big and a screen that's that big and a high def retina screen. So that, you know, that's something that it's a challenge, but it's definitely a priority for us to try to make that possible.
And one of the great things when, you know, we're very excited about the web in general, right? And all of the things you can do with the web. Actually, for those of you who are looking at the screen, this is actually a website. This is the web we're controlling. It's pretty amazing what you can do with web today.
He wasn't actually checking his email. I was just
giving him a hard time. I have another website that talks to this website, which is kind of crazy. And if Tim Berners-Lee is around, that's pretty awesome, man. But the thing is that when we did Pac-Man, for example, right, we, Chris and all the other people on the team, spending a lot of time testing doodles, you know, in all sorts of various configurations, right? So tablets, you know, smartphones, old browsers, new browsers, slow computers, fast, you know, you name it. But obviously, we can't really test all of it, right? But since, you know, we're using open web, we're using all of those standards that are well known. For example, with Pac-Man, we got a tweet saying, "Oh my God, this game works on my Wii, on my Opera browser." And we didn't even occur to us to test it on Wii, on Opera, and it worked. And it worked really great. So, you know, we spend a lot of effort making sure, you know, we think about everything. And just because it's open web and there's a lot of it everywhere, people can enjoy it in a way that probably no other technology can be enjoyed today.
I guess that said, as we do simultaneously try to push, we have this sort of natural tension of we try to make these doodles accessible to everyone as much as possible, but also we want to do the latest and greatest stuff. So sometimes, like the interactive, like the sports doodles we're doing, we have a cutoff where certain browsers can't play them because we're using technologies that just aren't available in older browsers. So, or in the case of Pac-Man or the Moog doodle, we actually ended up almost designing it, doing it twice the amount of work because we wanted it to work so widely. Were there solutions for computers that could do the web audio API standard and browsers that weren't up to date yet? So it's always a judgment call for us because there's only so many hours in a day, we want to keep pushing forward.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that maybe it's not obvious, but there's a lot of hours spent behind just strategizing for every single doodle, like what exactly it is that we want to achieve and which browser are we going to support and how we can scale it back, and if it doesn't make sense, what do we do then?
If I didn't get to your question, my apologies. There are just so many great questions, and I want to ask two final ones from up here. First of all, can you talk a little bit about Doodle for Google and what the aim of that program is and what you hope to achieve with it?
Sure. So Mateo is like our poster child. We love Mateo, and it's awesome. He's actually a Bay Area kid. But Doodle for Google is actually a contest we do all over the world, and many, many countries, United States. I just got back from the Doodle for Google a couple weeks ago in Poland, and also I went to the one in China, which was just really incredible. This is the Polish winner. It was really terrific. There's always symbols of Poland. It's really, and this is actually the one I won in China. Thank you, magic website. So what it is basically is an opportunity. This one in the U.S. this year, kid from Wisconsin named Dylan, we let kids read. We have a theme this year. It was if I was a time traveler, or where I would go to ... A fairly open theme, and we let kids age 8 to 18 draw a logo. And this year we had over 100,000 submissions, and it's a scholarship competition. The winners get a scholarship and a bunch of other goodies. We fly them out to New York for an award ceremony where all the doodlers come. And it's like really one of the highlights of the year for us because, the sort of creative spirit that comes naturally to a child or just a young person who doesn't have the inhibitions that adults like kind of grow to let weigh on them, is the type of creativity we try to have all the time as professionals. So it's just a joy to like hang out with like what's generally like it's basically the genuine article, and just people kind of playing with our logo in a really like really delightful ways that we never thought of, and just have that sort of free creative spirit. And there's Mateo's again. I remember this one. So this is a great example. Actually, like seeing this was what was the theme that year? It was if I could go anywhere. What was it? Oh, what I'd like to do someday, right? So, and like Mateo is hilarious. Like he's just an alien slurping up the earth. And when we saw it, we were just cracking up, And we were like, this is just so wonderful. And so we have all these come in, and then we actually put it on the public website. We get millions of views on the website. People vote for them, and the winner's chosen. And it's just really like again that spirit that we try to emulate professionally every day is something that just comes naturally. Like my nephews sing and dance and paint and wrestle and are just sort of free, and that's something that is really precious, and I'm very grateful to work at a company that values that and tries to put that as like on our mantelpiece, on our front page to show that spirit with the world.
So one final question that I'd like for each of you to take a shot at, which is where do you hope Google Doodle goes from here? You first, Jen.
Oh man. I hope that it goes to a place that's so interesting that it stresses me out. Because that means that it has to be something that I've never done and I'm not familiar with and I want to cry about, but that also means that it'll probably be something new and cool.
Chris?
I think for me, the greatest thing is when the concept of the doodle kind of evolves and takes on its own community aspects. So a lot of times you'll go onto YouTube the day of, the day after, and see, oh, here's someone who destroyed my score in hurdles, or someone who, like, They did a puppet show. I'm not that good at hurdles, actually. It's kind of sad. they did a puppet show with the Henson Doodle. I think that kind of letting users have the opportunity to create their own content using the doodles is very interesting. So I'd like to see us, without repeating ourselves, keep pursuing that sort of model.
Martin.
So one of the obvious things I was thinking about is, you know, what's the new technology we could use to get doodles, you know, in a better place, or try something new. And, you know, any of you who pays attention to HTML5, this all sorts of amazing things are happening, you know, literally every day, right? All sorts of new technologies that, you know, we're already looking at, and we're thinking, you know, could we use it in some doodles in the future? You know, what would be a good combination? But it's kind of the easy answer, right? And it's not really about technology in the end, right? And I think the only thing that I hope for is whatever I work on next, you know, people really just enjoy it. And, you know, it brings them joy, or maybe, you know, some memories from whenever, you know, whatever we're celebrating, or inspires them to do something. Things like that, right? I think those are the things that matter the most. And, you know, if sometimes some of, like, my work, or the hardest part of my work is saying no when we have a technology that we're really excited about and we're thinking, you know, does it really make sense to use it, right? What if it's just an illustration? It's still a lot of work for Jen and other illustrators. But, you know, do we have to use technology, right? Can we just do without it? And sometimes the answer is yes. So I'm hoping that, you know, sometimes, you know, I just don't do any work and we still get a really great doodle. And then I win.
So I kind of think of that question in sort of two levels. One level is sort of like secrets that I don't want to tell, because I don't want to ruin any surprises. Right. But another level is more general, in that, like, kind of speaking a little bit back to what I was talking about for Doodle for Google and sort of the sort of spirit of creativity that that children sort of have naturally. Like, I just want to get better. I want our team to get better, and I want at sort of where ideas come from is like a magical thing to me. I don't know where they come from. I don't know like how it happens. I just know that they come, and it's like a gift. You know, that you can then, you know, hopefully, you know, it's a little seed that you can share, grow and share with the world. And I just want to get better at, like, fostering those things. And I want to create a team that, you know, everybody feels like they are in tune with these gifts that they're getting all the time, these ideas they're getting, and they're using their, you know, considerable skills to raise those up and share it with their audience. And there are just a lot of, like, somewhat boring, but kind of, you know, in some sense, like infrastructure kind of stuff. It's like basically my adult self wants to learn how to make my child self like work freely and like without friction, and to share as many of these ideas as the team has, because there's many, many, many more ideas that we have than we could possibly pull off. And even the ideas that we pull off, you know, there's always something, the next step that I would have loved to have taken at that time. And we've grown so much as a team already just in the last few years, both in sheer numbers of people, but also just the kind of scope and quality of what we're trying to pull off, and I love the trajectory we're on, and I want to just keep building a machine that can kind of keep that, you know, keep that going.
Thank you for taking us behind the scenes tonight. Your passion, your talent, your engineering skill, and your commitment to this whole thing, I think it's really inspirational. And it shows that either if you're technical or non-technical, you can still make a huge contribution to a project like this. And it's just been wonderful to have you with us. So thank you again. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and have a good night.
You've been listening to a KQED Public Affairs special recorded at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View on August 8th. This program featured the art and technology behind Google Doodles. The moderator was John Holler, president and CEO of the Computer History Museum. The recording engineer was Jim Bennett. The technical supervisor was Monte Carlos. I'm Tara Seiler. Thanks for listening.